Hello and welcome to the special episode of Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers podcast. I'm Mathilde and I'm your host, and today I'm welcoming Marianne Richmond on this show. Marianne has touched the lives of millions for nearly three decades through her beloved picture books that help people share their hearts and connect with those they love. I write for the unique everybody, says Marianne. Our stories are different and our feelings are a lot the same. Her newest kids book, The World Is Awaiting You, has named Target's 2024 Picture Book of the Year. Inspired by her own childhood journey with epilepsy, Marianne is passionate about the power of storytelling and creative self-expression to learn, heal, and grow. Her debut memoir, If You Were My Daughter, Healing an Unmothered Heart, illuminates how the stories we were born into shape the ones we tell about ourselves and reminds the reader we have the powerful permission to choose and embody who we are meant to be. Marianne has recently added therapists to her credential after completing a master in clinical mental health counseling. Marianne lives in Nashville with her husband Jim and Otis Adventure, the 12-year-old dog who is increasingly unadventurous. She's a mom to four young adults, each finding their way into the world, and all whom prefer numbers over words and paint.
Okay, so welcome, Marianne. I am absolutely thrilled to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
And so today we are here to speak with Marianne and explore her journey with writing her book, If You Were My Daughter, which is a memoir of your experience in your own life, in your journey from your childhood with having a narcissistic mother that has, in certain ways, neglected you, failed to see you, failed to give you that nourishing, unconditional love that would be what mother love would be about. So that was a very courageous book to write.
Thank you.
And the first question I have for you is, what was that process like? Because I know you were writing children's book first and then you went into this. So what was the process of shifting and actually bringing your own story into a book?
Ooh, yeah, that is such a good question. I have been writing children's books for 30 years, a long time. And this book feels like the explanation behind that whole body of work, that I am now telling my own story of why I have been putting into the world all these messages of love and encouragement and belonging for, honestly, little people, but the child within. I think that is what my children's books have done a great job of doing, is speaking to the child within, no matter our age. You know, part of writing this book was, you know, people tend to say, was it cathartic? And that doesn't feel like the right word. Satisfying feels more accurate, because I had never tackled a long form book before. So just the sheer project of trying to tell a story with chapters and dialogue and characters felt like a challenge I wanted to take on. Part of writing memoir is trying to figure out the story that you're telling, because you have all these variables and scenes and material in front of you. And what is the story? And so it took a long time to figure out, this is a mother-daughter story. Yes, it's a health journey and it's a little bit of a business journey of my writing career, but at the heart, it's a mother-daughter story. And I felt that I got to a place where I was able to see with clarity the emotional arc of this story. Mm-hmm. And that's when I knew, okay, I can see this from an emotional distance, a much stronger, healthier place, that I want to tell this story now.
Mm-hmm. And in that So writing of your memories, because ultimately that's what it is. You went all the way back. I've read through the book. So like at the beginning, we're starting that you're very young.
Yes.
And I know from working with daughters of narcissistic mothers that there are moments in which we forget. We're not sure if what happened was actually really like that. And there is a tendency in our mothers not to really give us the details in the same way as we remember. Let's say they don't necessarily confirm for us our version of the story. So how was
Yes.
the process for you of relying on actually what you remembered? Or did you have journals maybe, or how did that go?
Yeah, gosh, another great question. There was a lot of material. I totally understand what you're saying about memories and are they accurate? And given that there was so much trauma in my story, and trauma defined as overwhelming helplessness, I have found that definition of trauma, of overwhelming helplessness, to be so clarifying in this story, that those highly emotional experiences really tend to get wired with deep within you. So that was helpful. I kept journals as a, I have kept a journal since seventh grade. It has taken many forms through the years, so I had all my material. After I, at one point in my journey, I requested medical records from every key doctor I had seen. So I had all their stuff. My mom had journals as well as my dad. So there was so much material that had their voice, their sentences, written down. Yeah, so part of the challenge was honestly whittling down a whole bunch of stuff.
And how was the going through your parents' journals and yours? Like, because obviously that's from like completely different point of views, and with all
Correct.
the wounding that is involved and the different life experiences of your parents, and then the actual experience of you as a child. So how was that process of going through that?
Ooh. Yeah, if I could sum up and say there are many versions of a story, that is the truest statement, because my narrative for a long time, honestly, was quite a victim narrative. And I was a victim in many ways. I was a victim to medical gaslighting, where doctors wouldn't believe what I was saying. So there was some true victimhood in there. But I also, as I started to get older and get into therapy myself, I started diving into my mom's story to see what the truth of her story was to herself. Because isn't that what is our truth? What is the truth? And then what is our truth? Are two very different things sometimes. And I think it was truly making an effort to see through her perspective based on the story she herself grew up in, being a daughter of immigrant parents, having her own trauma in the Air Force. I started to be able to see how she was parenting out of her own fear, and probably had convinced herself that she was protecting me, even though her version of protection felt like abandonment. So healing has a lot of invitations within it. To trade our version of the story we're telling for something else. There's so many choice points in healing. Does that resonate?
It does, as in choice between continuing with the victim story or actually choosing a different story for yourself, and then also seeing the story of the other person. So you may have your own emotional experience of it, which seeing your mother's story doesn't invalidate. But at the
Correct.
same time, there's also her story, which is valid from her perspective. So I can see how that can be a choice, and there's a lot of healing in that, if that's what you were meaning.
That is 100% what I mean. And I was, of all places, sitting in a church pew, which, God, I've sat in hundreds of church pews in my life. But this particular day, the reverend said, "Forgiveness costs you your story." And that is the quote that is in the front of my jacket. And I remember hearing that for the first time. And I was like, wow, that is so true. Mm-hmm. That when you do choose to let certain things go or choose to accept certain things, you cannot tell your story the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I really get that.
Mm-hmm. I still feel bummed. You know, I like my daughter brain will probably forever feel ripped off that my experience wasn't different. But it's also hard to carry a really disempowering narrative around forever. Like that just isn't a great place to exist. And a therapist that was so life-changing for me talked about this idea of growing the pause, growing the space between stimulus and response where the freedom lies. And you're nodding as a familiarity to that. And that was so key to my growth of realizing I do have a choice, but what does self-trust even look like? Because as a little girl, I had it. I knew there was something wrong with me. I knew I wasn't the problem. And everybody talked me out of that. I was told it was psychosomatic. I was told I was using it for attention. And for your listeners, I was having full body convulsions, epileptic seizures. I was told I had brain allergies. That was a favorite. I was told I had a pinched nerve, and that was my problem. And so this sense of what? As a young child, like, no, I know that's not true. And yet everyone who had power, my mother, the doctors, were talking me out of my own knowing. Mm-hmm. That is a hard thing to get back when your early mechanism of self-trust is broken. Mm-hmm. That is what was the healing journey for me, is learning to trust that voice that knew the truth and was talked out of the truth.
Yeah, and sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say some verbally from other people, but my own voice of questioning my worth. You know, it's like the outer voices and the inner voices were my enemies, truly.
Mm-hmm. And what I was going to say is that in the book, reading the book, that part, that contrast between what the child has been told from the outside and that inner voice of what? Can you not see me? Can you actually not see what I'm going through? It's really, it comes across really, really well. It was one thing I actually really resonated with, because of, although I didn't have the same journey in terms of having a medical situation as a child, my mother did neglect me forever. Like, she gave me to my grandparents when I was only a few months old and effectively never actually took care of me. And then the times that she did come in, she was actually quite toxic anyways. But that abandonment, that neglect, that not being seen, and having one voice in your head that's telling you something, but everyone else is just going completely against it. It's an immense contrast. And what you were saying about that pause, I know that the listeners that are listening from the podcast, they know that I just released an episode literally 2 days ago about pause, feel, and respond. That's the three-step methods that I use in my work, like, all the time.
Oh, like, I love that.
Pause, you feel into yourself, and then you respond. And in that pause, in that gap, is where, as adults, we're beginning to regain contact with that inner wisdom that has been gaslighted by others and then also by that inner voice of ourselves.
Oh, you just said that. Just, I have full resonance to what you just said. Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Yes. Yeah, by the time I got in therapy, I was like, I don't even know what my favorite color is. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know who the heck I am. I really don't. Yeah.
I resonate with that because it's one of the things that I have said so many times. I don't even know what my favorite color is. And it seems so simple. It's such a simple thing. Like, what do you mean you don't know? But it's like everything in my brain is wired to actually say what my mother would have said or what I knew would have been approved by rather than me. So
correct. Yeah, that innate, what do you call that? Like bequeathing, if you will. That's the word that comes to my mind. It just automatically, which I think, you know, it goes back to that whole biological attachment in what the order of things should be or who the caring adult should be. And when that system is screwed up, it just takes a lifetime to sort of piece yourself back together. Just a bummer. It's a bummer, which is, you know, and to add to that, which is why I find art and writing and any creative expression so healing, because it is a process that invites you to constantly be in a quiet conversation with your inner self. You know, what color am I going to choose? Do I like that color on the paper? You know, mark making and all of those artistic expressions are a constant evaluating process. And oh, I just find it such a great metaphor for regaining an inner wholeness.
Mm-hmm. Have you found in that journey of creativity through your art and through your writing, could you see, looking back, like the evolution from the Marianne that wasn't actually fully sure what her voice was or what her favorite color was to the one now that is more like into herself and into her own choices and inner reason?
Yes. And what the biggest evidence of that is my children's book career. Because the very, very first gift book I wrote, it was way back in the late 90s. I had just got through my brain surgery and I was just writing to honestly pass the time because I couldn't work and I was hanging out with nothing to do. And I found that what I was writing back then was very aspirational. Like, wouldn't it be great if this is the way things were? Wouldn't it be great if I was loved in the way that I'm writing about? It just felt like a more aspirational creating. And then over time, as I continued my healing journey, my books became more embodied and writing from a sense of knowing. You know, like there's a book called Be Brave, Little One that I have, and it's probably one of my best-selling books. And I feel like it's a memoir for little kids. Like it just, it's, you know, it talks about be brave to begin to listen inside to the voice of your heart, so truthful and wise. And then the whole book is choices. Be brave to stand up, tell what you know, be brave to sit down, say a hello. And it shows you that courage looks all sorts of ways, loud, quiet, big, little, and it all counts if it's congruent with the voice of your heart. And that felt like finally such an embodied book for me. Yeah, finally I was who I was writing about, and that felt good. That felt really good.
Oh, I can so resonate with that. And the welcoming of all the different parts of yourself, because if courage can look a different way, that's actually an inherent welcoming of all the different aspects of you, the maybe the loud aspect and the quiet one and the ones that we can consider more positive or more negative, which I don't like using these words, but just for simplicity, as in like the aspects that we're more wanting to accept easily and the ones that we find a bit harder to accept about ourselves. But if you can accept all of that, you're actually gone to the point where you're genuinely mothering yourself in the way that you would have wished to be mothered when you were a child. So it's beautiful.
Yes. I just love the way I feel like you just are able to so succinctly bring things together. And I feel that what you said is so true. It reminds me a little bit of the internal family systems work as well. The idea of, our collection of parts, if you will. And in IFS, they talk about true self energy being these 8 C's. And I went back and got a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling about 1.5 years ago, which has given me all sorts of new language for my own journey. But courage is one of the 8 C's of true self energy. It's courage, confidence, connectedness, calmness, compassion, clarity. They're all C's. And when I'm working with clients, trying to help them on their own journeys back to self-trust, it is such a great anchor to say, where do you see yourself exhibiting curiosity, clarity, courage? That is pointing you back to yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no anxiety or fear in the 8 C's. Those are not true self qualities. So that's also been a really beautiful North Star kind of theory, if you will, for cultivating self-trust.
Mm-hmm. Because when you can make that link, then you are actually linking back to that child you that had those.
Yes.
That connection.
Yes. Yes. What were you confident about? What are you confident about now? And you start to realize, oh, they're still there. It's just that this part of feeling unworthy grew so big, I couldn't see anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a journey of effectively reclaiming. When we're reclaiming our inner wisdom, we're also reclaiming our voice, because to be congruent with that inner wisdom that we're reclaiming, we also need to be congruent when we speak it and when we bring it up forward. And I know that this is one of the things that can create a lot of contrast and a lot of conflicting emotions, because you start reconnecting with your inner wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it comes to speaking it, there's like a lot of fear of being exposed, fear of being rejected, and a whole new layer
mm-hmm.
of the wounds kind of comes to the surface. So right. I'm interested in knowing how did you, even in your children's book, not necessarily in the last one, but this process of bringing your voice back to the fourth and expressing it, were there fears? Were you afraid of being exposed, judged, viewed in a weird way?
Yes, all capital letters, 5 exclamation points on that. Yes, because my children's books, while they're inspired by life, there is an emotional distance there for sure. And to actually put this out, that is a really vulnerable, open piece about what I felt and experienced. Oh my gosh, I've had so much anxiety over the last 6 months. Everything from having my 2 brothers read it, nieces who have read it. It's like the closer the people are to me, the more vulnerable it feels. And it still feels kind of that way. And yet people are like, well, why'd you do it then if it's so scary? Because one of the most helpful things is to feel we have a witness. You know, Kelly McDaniel, who wrote Mother Hunger. I don't know if you've run across
it. I haven't heard of this.
Oh, you would like that one. It's called Mother Hunger. And she talks about how adult daughters can heal from lost nurturance, protection, and guidance. So those are the 3 things she names. But she said to me, Marianne, we heal by being witnessed. And that was just one of those phrases that felt mind-blowing to me and helped me make sense of why I've been writing so long is my children's books have been witnesses to other people's journeys, whether they were walking through grief, health challenges, babies in the NICU unit, kids with developmental challenges. These books let people feel like, oh, I'm not alone. And it's that is the same intention I wanted with this memoir, is for someone to read it and feel, oh my gosh, of course, like it's okay that I feel all these things, because that would be the logical way to feel given my experience. You know, it's so many times I hear a client say, well, I know I should feel, I know I should be grateful. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Like 1 + 1 = 2. You've been emotionally abused, physically neglected, and you should feel what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was willing to trade my own vulnerability to hopefully come alongside people in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
And just rip that Band-Aid off a little bit.
That is very courageous. Going back to the seas, that is definitely very courageous. When we're talking about the people that come out of the fire and come back towards the fire with buckets of water, like literally that's what you're doing when you're trading your vulnerability to support others like that.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. It started from the first, you know, it sat in my computer for the longest time, and I finally got the courage to send it to my editor, who I've known for 14 years. You would think that wouldn't even be that scary, but it was still really scary. And she received it so lovingly. And then she said, oh, I emailed it to, and she named like 5 people in the office. And what? You just emailed it? She says, you know, Marianne, the whole point is people read it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. It's like, okay, got it. Got it. But yeah, I've been on a bit of a book launch, you know, for about 3 weeks. And there was one night I was so exhausted from putting myself out there. I slept for 16 hours straight. It's just the emotional energy, you know, of wanting to show up for it and invite people and encourage people to read it at the same time while you're like, it's tiring.
I really get it, because I do have similar feelings about my podcast, which is my way of trading
your
ability,
yes,
to support others, because like it's quite exposing, and my mother is alive and well, like she could listen to it.
Oh.
I know my family could of course listen to it. I am, like my listeners know that I am no contact with my mother, but that doesn't stop anyone from listening or reaching out. So there is a vulnerable element to it. So I really resonate with that. Sometimes there is a moment of, oh.
What did I just talk about? This is your witnessing for others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and circling back to when you talked about, yes, there's the spoken voice. For sure. But there are many ways to have a voice. One of my newest picture book is actually called The World is Awaiting You. And I know I'm showing you the cover because I know it's not on for everyone to see. But there's a page in there that I intentionally wrote how the world is awaiting your voice to speak and dance and sing, cast your own vote, play your own note. What message will you bring? So maybe you're not writing a book or doing a podcast. Maybe you're doing a piece of art that is really, you know, intriguing or perplexing, and it invites conversation. I mean, there's just so many ways to have a voice outside of speaking.
Mm-hmm. And I love how you brought that this process of writing this book and sending it to your editor and all of that, that there is an anxiety there, that there is a level of emotional intensity to it, because very often there is a trick that we believe, which is that these people like me with the podcast, you with the book, that we're over it, that we kind of got to this magical place where we don't feel any of this anymore. And it's so, it couldn't be further from the truth that if you can feel these emotions and having built the safety in your nervous system to actually experience them, which is intense, but all the same, express yourself and express your voice in whichever form that comes, as you mentioned, that is truly where the healing happens.
I love what you said about, I'm not sure exactly. You said if your nervous system can handle it, however you just said that, I love that because it is developing that inner tolerance or that inner capacity to feel fear. And in Be Brave, Little One, it's be brave to be scared, to stomp and to cry, be brave to mess up before you retry. Fear is a given for so many things. And we want to look back and go, oh gosh, I had something that felt so important and resonant, and I let fear stop me. I always tell myself that in five minutes, in a day, in 3 months, this will be the past. And I can tell you what happened. She hung up on me. No one came. Everyone came. It was great. It sucked. I mean, if you could just go through, it will now be the past and part of your experience.
Yeah. And there's learning in it too, each time.
Each time. Yes. And I've had so much learning already just putting this book out to what people like, what they don't like, what gets people to show up, what doesn't. Yeah, it's continuous. It's continuous.
I know reading in your on your website that you went through the journey of self-publishing and also of publishing in the more traditional way. So what I wanted to ask you on that is, how did you handle the rejections, or even just the fear of rejection? Because when we come from that place of having been neglected as children, of needing that validation and that love because you didn't get it as a child. So you have all of these wounding of not being accepted, not being enough, not deserving success and joy, trying to be invisible so that your mother doesn't get even more toxic. You know, all of these things, putting yourself out is intense. So
it is.
How did you handle that work, and what was your journey with that?
You're good at this. You ask such great questions. I've got a couple thoughts on that. The self-publishing piece, you know, it's funny. I feel like I used to be braver in some ways. Like when I didn't know what the heck I was doing, there was a certain bravery that came with that. And that was almost believing in, well, let's see. I'm kind of stumbling through that because I have a lot of things to say. Okay, this is where I want to land with that. I believe the key is when you can fully connect to your inherent goodness and separate that from your circumstances. Because what happens is we collapse that and we make our circumstances part of our identity. Does that make sense? So it's like, I am good as is. Like, I have inherent worth. And getting to a place where I know that and I believe that. And I had an emotionally unavailable mother. So it's this externalizing. You know, I have a good manuscript I wrote, and this publishing industry is challenging. It doesn't mean I am not a good writer. So I think to be able to externalize the problem is the problem. I mean, that's classic narrative therapy, right? The person isn't the problem. The problem is the problem. And that was a key for me to realize I am an amazing person. I am a great daughter. And I have a mom who can't see it. And that has just allowed me to ride the disappointment, probably. And I also feel like, what is the umbrella belief that you carry around about disappointment? Because that's up to us too. Is the world out to get you? Is that the belief you're carrying around everywhere? Or is it, things work out? Or, you know, insert your own. So I really have gotten to a place where I can look at things that don't work out and move through them pretty quick and be like, yeah, well, I can't figure out why that didn't, but onward.
I remember a quote, which don't ask me who said it because I am not very good at remembering names, but it was like, make art, and while everyone is busy deciding if they like it or not, you just make more art. And it was like, we had it in the kitchen because my daughters are artists, and it's like, yeah, this is like, it's important, we need to remember this part. You just keep making art, and if they like it or not, that's their problem, not yours.
Yes. And it's really, really hard when your art and your creativity is so visible, you know, because if my creativity is problem solving and I'm just at a desk doing my data entry for some company, but I'm really creative in problem solving, no one is weighing in on that in the way that people weigh in on art and books and podcasts and ratings and yeah, we just put ourselves, like, why do we do this?
I do ask myself that quite often, to be honest.
Putting myself up for critique so much when I've lived with critique. Yeah, isn't that a perplexing question?
It kind of is. I haven't found the answer just yet.
No.
But I do believe that we do build some kind of a muscle too of, as you mentioned, that criticism is gonna pass and ultimately get to the place that it doesn't define you, that that's not you. And each time, I know for myself, like I sent a book to an editor last autumn. It was a big thing for me. It was actually, I do write novels as a more as a pastime. It's like there's a healing in it. You know, you're going through the trauma of the characters and
they're
going through yours. So there's new healing every time. But I did, okay, I'll do this. And her, not criticism, actually, she did her job brilliantly. She told me what could be improved, which is what I paid for. So perfect.
Correct.
I'm still recovering. So it's like every time there's a new layer of, whoa, this is hitting me here. So although I know all of this, but there's still some layers of that. And there is an honoring in feeling into that, taking time to make that space and then respond.
I cried just yesterday. I had a super frustrating moment in this journey. And I took a walk and I just cried. And yeah. And it felt great to just let it out, because regardless, you know, if you've had the mothering or lack thereof that someone like you and I have had, it is just simply hard to be rejected. No matter how internally healthy and whole we are, it just sucks to get a no when we want a yes.
Yep.
You know, so are we extra sensitive to it? Maybe, but it's just hard to. And the publishing world just is hard. It is hard. There's so much rejection in it. And that is, I have that conversation often with my fellow authors of so much gatekeeping, you know, from an agent to an editor to the acquisitions department to the retailer to the bookstore. You know, all along you're trying to get yeses through a long chain of people.
Yes. And I do admit that that still scares me quite a bit. I haven't got through that phase just yet. I'm beginning to tap my foot into it, my toes into it. And yeah, that's like,
we can talk offline about that whole industry if you want. I've got about 30 years worth of experience
That is
in
very precious.
ups and downs of it, which is why I think a lot of people are taking their own stories and self-publishing, because they either don't have the patience or the desire, you know, to do it through a traditional system. And I love that. You know, I did a pop-up how to write memoir class when I was in Denver, and 12 people showed up with fascinating stories, just fascinating, that they want to get out for various reasons. And yeah, I just love encouraging people to do so.
Going back to the point that you made earlier, which was, it really struck home when you said the forgiveness, that when you forgive, you're losing a part of your story. You wrote your story. So what I want to know, it's because I haven't, maybe you have this written in your book, but as I said, I did go through it, but I didn't read page for page, so maybe I missed it. But have you come to a place of forgiveness with your mother? And was that helped by the process of writing your memoirs?
So the first answer is I have forgiven my mother. She died a decade ago, and in a interesting continuation of the whole story of feeling unseen, my mom got Alzheimer's and forgot everything, mm-hmm. including who I was. So it just like went. There was never any resolution, any her coming around and saying, oh, I could see where my decisions impacted you, like nothing. I felt like I had forgiven her. And there's a quote out there about the choice to forgive is instant, but feeling forgiveness takes a long time. And that rings true to me. To me, forgiveness was trading my own bitterness and anger for something that didn't have, I was tired of having it such a grip on me and being such a part of my identity, my narrative of how I was wronged. I think what allowed me to have that softening was really making an intention to try to understand the story that I was born into. And that is a big theme of this book, is how the stories that we're born into shape the ones we tell about ourselves. And if I am truly a continuum of a story that started long before me, in some ways generations ago, how do I want to change the trajectory of my chapters here, this short time? And my mom was born into, you know, an immigrant family who had no money. She went through electroshock therapy. She was traumatized. She never wanted to be married. And that's a lot of what I read in her own journals, which was made me sad, where she admitted she felt talked into marriage. She never wanted to be a mother. And there was such sadness in that for me. At the same time, I wish I was mothered differently. Like, both those things, I feel.
Yeah, and they can both live there at the same time.
Yeah. So that was my process of widening my perspective, I guess, that allowed me to trade that condemnation for more compassion. Still kind of be annoyed by it, but let it be the louder voice, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It's actually beautiful to even hear that both voices can be there and sometimes sort of switch places for a moment. That is not, the forgiveness not necessarily is a one-time event that encompasses the entire thing, that the different parts can actually come up at times.
Correct. And I've had, you know, you mentioned being no contact with your mom, and I've had lots of people say, why did you keep going back for more? Why did you keep expecting and putting yourself in positions of expecting, whether it was when you had your babies or you know, just inviting, 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 and being rejected, rejected, rejected. And I don't know if I fully answered that question of, yeah, why did I keep, what a glutton for punishment. So I really admire your choices in ways that you've had to do that feel like the most courageous choice for you. Yeah, I don't know. I did. I kept hoping, kept expecting, kept, and it never happened.
Thank you for sharing that. I always say it in the podcast, like we have listeners that are no contact and plenty of listeners that are actually still at different degrees of contact, some very close, some maybe more low contact, but it's such a personal choice. And
So
there's
perfect.
really no right or wrong or like one story fits all. It's really, really very, very personal.
It is so personal, and which is so important to have that witness for us to feel okay with doing it really differently in the ways that we can, as best we can. Yeah. You know, that was a big choice for me too when my mom got sick. It was like, do I really feel like showing up for her? Not really. And that was another choice point. But I also couldn't, I don't know, something like I had a hard time watching her fend against this unforgiving disease. Like that just felt cruel. And yet someone's like, well, she kind of did that to you. And I'm like, ah, it's just so confusing sometimes. It's so confusing.
We get into the world again of shoulds.
Oh,
And it is a
yes.
word that I really personally don't like very much because it's like whatever you did in the moment was clearly what felt right by you in the moment. And so, should you have done it or should you not have done it? Well, that's that we go into this ultimate truth, which doesn't actually exist. So, it's like whatever feels your choice in the moment, that's in your awareness, in the best of your intentions in that moment, that's what you felt was
Yeah,
the
which
right thing
also
to do.
back to the self-trust conversation of what are your reliable how do you hear the language of your soul? Is it through feelings? Is it through inner voices? Is it just through a sense of peace? And you really have to get to know your own language. You know, when I feel my stomach clench, okay, that's a hard no. When I, you know, and that's just so trial and error. Because we have times where our gut said no, but our brain said, oh, but I don't want to be left out. And so we do it, but it wasn't serving us. So it's a constant practice of who gets to lead the way, head, heart, gut, who's in charge.
Yeah, constant practice is actually the big thing, isn't it? Like, we're not ever getting to a place where we have arrived and we don't need to practice. There's like this bringing them all in alignment when you can bring your heart, gut, and brain, like, and they're like, we're actually in agreement. We're all there, and that
Oh.
pause space that allows that it's a practice. It is.
Oh, yes. And when it happens, it's like woohoo. And I find I still struggle with people, and this is not their fault, but the kind of people who have such certainty and decisiveness. It's like, wow, how do you do that? Because I second guess everything. I'm just the ultimate second guesser. Yes. Well, maybe yes. Well, it's kind of no.
I resonate with that. I resonate with that very much.
That is a classic sign of an unmothered heart, I believe, is the second guessing the.
Yes, when I'm observing my daughters and the level of certainty is not necessarily the right word, but confidence, how
Oh.
behind themselves they are. I'm like,
Yeah.
wow, because I so was not like that at their age. So, and I'm still not. I'm 40, I'm still not, but they are so behind themselves. And I'm like, thanks God. That's the only thing I can say is like, wow.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way about my daughter. She is so decisive, and it's helpful because I'll be like, all right, what do you think? And she's just like, doo, doo, doo. I'm like, okay, thank you. You know, it's okay to rely on those people too that don't have our wounding.
And I do believe that that's quite the proof of that change of trajectory you were talking earlier, when we can see the next generation isn't carrying the same wounds. It means at some point we've made that choice of changing trajectory, and that cycle is actually not repeating anymore, which is personally for me is the biggest success.
Yes, I 100% agree. And giving our kids the tools to even talk about what is an inner knowing? What is, the hallmarks of solid core beliefs and worthiness and just all that stuff that we didn't get. And to be able to pass all those tools on so that when they're making their own decisions, they're starting from something.
Absolutely. Marianne, we've been talking for about an hour.
Oh my gosh, that went fast.
And it went really, really fast. This conversation's been absolutely amazing. So I want to know from you if there's anything that you feel we didn't bring that you would like to share and that you would like to bring.
Yes. I guess the last thing I would say is, you know, I've been asked repeatedly, you know, who's this book for? And I would say it is really a story for anyone who has struggled with their own sense of identity, their own sense of self-worth, feeling disbelieved or unseen in their journey. I don't think it has to be necessarily what, you know, my health crisis was, or with my mother in particular. I think there's a lot of entry points into the story for a lot of people. And also just to check out my children's books, because they feel like the other side of the coin. If someone's saying, oh my gosh, how do I cultivate that security with my own children? Like, read them my books, you know, is what I feel like. There's so much more about, yeah, being a witness to our kids' journeys, to our own inner journeys. I call them like life books too. So,
And I feel from hearing you and the titles of them that, as you mentioned, your own inner child can benefit from you reading those books, even if you're reading them to your children as an excuse. But I think your own inner child is going to listen to that.
Oh, 100%. Yes, I have had more moms of even adult children crying about them, or teachers or whatever. So yeah, no age limit to a good picture book.
Brilliant. Now I'm going to have all your links in the description of the episode. So if anyone wants to connect with Marianne with her work, because I know you also help writers of children's book through the publishing, as in like to learn how to write it, how to unblock, how to go through the publishing or self-publishing. So all of that is available in your work. I've seen it in your website, which
Yes, and I'm always looking for opportunities to join events and gatherings with my books too. So if any of your listeners are like, oh, this would be a good fit for fill in the blank.
But, yeah, you know. Perfect. But also what I wanted to ask you is if someone wanted to buy the book, If You Were My Daughter, is it now available like on Amazon or different places where it can be?
Yeah, everywhere books are sold. I mean, you've got bookshop.org, you've got the Amazon, of course. Barnes & Noble has been a big supporter. Kind of all the places, really. You would have no problem if you just Google the title. And
fantastic. Brilliant. That's great. That's great to know for everyone, because it is really a beautiful book. There were so many points in it that I read that it was like, I was actually getting emotional because I'm feeling, I know their journey. So I was like, whoa, there's so much that I resonate with in this. I actually started reading it thinking that it would have been a children's book. I got the book without even reading the introduction. So I was like, whoa. And then I was like, no, hold on a minute. There's so much in this, like, that's intense. So yeah, so it's definitely, I invite anyone that feels a resonance to get the book and give it a go, because it is a beautiful journey.
Thank you. I so appreciate that, and hearing what parts resonated with you too. That's just helpful to me as a writer, because often there's surprises about that. We intend one thing and then something completely different shows up. So that's really great for me too.
My God. So, Marianne, thank you so much for your time, for being here, for the beautiful conversation. It was so inspiring.
Oh, likewise. I'm just so thrilled to know you exist. And I'm going to be looking through your library of episodes because I have a feeling there will be many things I need to listen to.
Well, thank you so much. That's beautiful to hear. And as always, thank you everyone for listening in, for tuning in. Again, connect with Marianne if you felt the resonance. And it's beautiful to share this experience with all of you, as always. So with that, I'm going to wish you a wonderful week and lots of love. And bye for now.
Thank you.